I can see some editing ahead of me in the future. Come on. Sorry if there are some technical difficulties here. My guests here are going to have to let me know. Kyle, Gerald, is everything sounding okay on my end?
Other than a lot of background traffic noise. You're getting a lot of traffic noise.
Am I getting a lot of background noise? Okay, that's
right,
weird. I have my headphones
on.
Highway, aren't you? Yeah, I'm gonna have to go inside. That's okay. No problem. Anyways, folks, MCU's Media Edge YouTube channel and podcast out in the wilderness of the Ocala area of Southwest Florida, trying to remotely pull off a live stream part one of this Andor season one recap and like breakdown that I've been putting off forever. And essentially, the Wi-Fi at the hotel that I'm not going to name has not been very nice to me so far, but my guests, Gerald Glassford and Kyle, of course, from the True Believers Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, are bearing with me and being very patient with me, and hopefully you will be too. In the meantime, Gerald, it's very rare of you to decide to generously just jump over and say hello.
It's sorry.
Good to see you, man. How are you?
I'm all right. I apologize for not coming on more often. It's just the timing always works out because I'm on the West Coast and you're on the East Coast. It never seems to jive. And I just am always grateful when you jump on my show, the Pop Culture Cosmos. And I'm always glad when I can always come to you as well.
Most definitely. I would agree with you 100%. I enjoy going on the Pop Culture Cosmos. We certainly have some really good discussions on there without question. And of course, now my cards aren't even letting me in the hotel, which is always nice. I'm telling you, folks, I am having like the trip to go like see my kid at college of hell over here. But what are you gonna do? That such is the life of parenting. As my camera's all over the place. Kyle, how are you, brother? It's the last time I saw you.
I am doing well. Invasion episode 3. Doing well. Just saw Mission Impossible in the theaters. Catching up on our own podcast over here at the Fandom Podcast Network. But everything is going good.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I did not realize that Mission Impossible film was almost 3 hours long.
Yeah, it was a long one, but I had fun with it. It never really felt like it had any drag time in it, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Well, Gerald, I don't want to switch subjects away from Star Wars or from Andor or whatever and whatnot, but what's the pulse you're hearing and whatnot and everything with the Mission Impossible? I saw the Rotten Tomatoes scores and everything and whatnot already are similar to the ones that came out that they had for the second Top Gun film.
Well, and then also Metacritic has it in the 80s, close to the 80s, which is a really good score for AAA blockbuster action movie. The cinema score coming out for most audiences out there is right now graded at an A, which is obviously bodes well for hopefully a long run. The movie didn't get off to the greatest of starts at the box office, a little bit underwhelming, but we're hoping for a nice long run for this movie because I think it deserves it. I think it looks really good. Tom is doing what he can to go ahead and, you know, do all the stunts he can to try and amaze audiences. And I think it's really something that people need to go ahead and check out in like an IMAX or a really nice theater.
That's how I saw it in IMAX, and it was quite impressive. And I will say, from the last thing I saw here recently, it is going to have the biggest opening of any Mission Impossible film to this point.
Yeah, 5 days, $80 million, but they were still hoping for a little bit more. But the international takes it to about $250 million. But, you know, at $300 million before they did even any marketing on it, they need to make a little bit more chunk of cash to go ahead and get it in the black. So.
Well, let's put it this way, though. It's almost made more money than The Flash.
Oh, my gosh. I think you and I could do an indie film that probably makes more than The Flash.
The Flash is going out of most theaters this week, and it's going to finish under Green Lantern for box office.
That's a shame. And that's the second loser of the year for Warner Brothers and DC, you know, with what happened with Shazam.
Well, I do have to admit, I think the need to do it for. Definitely over the first one I saw, but I just think anything until James Gunn takes over is kind of on the
list. Sending him out to die.
How did Shazam? I didn't even know. I don't even know. Just for shits and giggles. Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Shazam
Dodger. Tank. You're not gonna believe this.
Shazam was a bomb at the box office.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch. Dodge just ate my entire fucking pizza.
You're going to have fun later with that.
This son of a bitch just ate my entire freaking pizza, this brand new pizza that my daughter dropped off. Man, one piece of it. He ate that whole son of a bitch.
You're going to have fun later.
Dodger, you are one brave son of a bitch, man. I'm telling you right now. If you even so much as ask me for a treat or whatever, whatnot, after you pulled that shit on me, that you have to get a whole new pizza now? Come on now. Anyways. No, I'm sorry about that. How did Shazam end up doing box office wise? I mean, honestly, I thought it was not very good at all. I'm sure that they lost money on it.
Oh, yeah, they lost a whole bunch of money on it. Right now, it stands worldwide. Gotta scroll down. That's never a good sign when I have to scroll down. Let's scroll down. It's number 25 for the year at $132 million total, which probably didn't even make back its production budget. So.
Wow. That is crazy. You're talking about $125 million worldwide box office.
Yeah.
Oof. That is not good, man. Jeez. But then again... And Kyle, and honestly, I'll tell you one thing. I will give props to Ocala for. They may have shitty Wi-Fi or whatever, but they've got a ton of movie theaters, and they have an IMAX theater and a drive-in here.
Oh yeah,
because we thought about going to see Mission Impossible, last night, but when we saw that it was 2 hours and 47 minutes long, we didn't go.
Yeah, nope. There's definitely some theaters out there, but yeah, it's a long runtime for Mission Impossible, but. Again, if you see it, especially if you see it in like an IMAX or a Dolby Digital type theater or something, it's worth it because it is one of those kind of movies you really need to see on the big screen.
Well, yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, Andre's the pop culture guy, wants to do like a no spoiler review on it on Monday night on our show. So like, I'll probably go see it. I will probably see it in IMAX tomorrow. To be honest with you, I'll do it while my daughter's Bella's at work. But yes, folks, I am remote. That's why I'm on my cell phone. You'll have to bear with me. I apologize. I'm still I try to be professional, but I'm still working out the kinks sometimes of these remote shows. And my daughter, thank God, decided to move back down to Florida for college. So once or twice a month, I'm gonna head up here, right? Shit. Maybe I'll have to get a place down here, Gerald. That's how I have to figure this Wi-Fi issue out, right?
Absolutely. Looking more like that, especially if you get locked out of your room once again.
No, you know what? Honestly, Kyle, maybe I can split like a space with a massage parlor, right?
Oh,
like, you know what I'm saying? Like of my choice, right? And I can get like a room there.
Well, just make sure you keep the locals happy. If you know what I mean.
I can even produce the show from the room. from my bed, like, you know, the little white bed or whatever. Anyways, folks, all right. Andor, season one, Rogue One. Now, I watched Rogue One the other day. I haven't watched it in years. Gerald, how long has it been since you watched Rogue One?
Since it came out in the theaters.
Oh, because you saw it in theaters.
I did, yes.
Ooh, you lucky son of a bitch, you.
Well, it earned over $1 billion, so there's, you know, quite a few of them around.
Hey, thank you. You know what, Gerald? Thank you for providing that for me and whatnot, because I never thought to look that up. But that's good to know.
$1 billion. Yeah. It.
Okay.
Unlike, you know, it obviously has served as one of the alternate stories in the the last decade of Star Wars Disney movies, and it proved to be one of their most successful. So.
Yeah.
Well, sure. Go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say, I think most people consider it the best film of the Disney era of Star Wars.
I would agree with that. It has its flaws, but I think overall it's the most enjoyable to watch. It's the one that doesn't make you cringe while watching it. Let's put it that way.
Exactly. No, I've seen Rogue One a couple of times in the theaters, because I actually went and saw it when they re-released it right before Andor came out in the theaters again. So, I'm a big fan of Rogue One. It's, in my opinion, it's probably in my top three of Star Wars films, just overall. But
so 2016, it came out. The budget was $265 million, and it did over $1 billion box office wise. Okay, hey, you know what? Now, at that point, not going too far off course, but Kyle or Gerald, can either one of you tell me of the early 2000s Star Wars trilogy, right? Did those films make over $1 billion in box office?
Are you talking about the 1, 2, and 3, episode 1, 2, and 3?
I'm not talking about the original Star Wars. I'm talking about the second trilogy.
Yeah, the prequels.
Yeah, the prequels. Yeah, two, and three, I believe, all went over $1 billion, or at least close to it.
Let's see. Revenge of the Sith took in $868.4 million.
Okay. That's close enough.
You got to index that by inflation too, right? Because we're talking about the early 2000s, aren't we?
With inflation, it's over $1 billion. But that's 864 is a pretty good chunk of change right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so then at that point, now this is actually interesting for me, folks. And now, Gerald. Kyle knows this, but I'm not a Star Wars novice, but I did really kind of fall off after that prequel trilogy.
You know, episode two, I do want to correct it though. Episode two only made about $650 million. Episode three, I've got to go look at that one too as well. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Episode three, none of them broke. The only one that broke $1 billion worldwide is
episode one was the only $1 billion one. Okay.
Yeah.
So then basically at that point, then word of mouth came out and whatnot, and there was a drop off financially, box office wise, basically probably because of word of mouth as far as the quality of the films.
A bit of that, and I think definitely the Phantom Menace benefited from, you know, the Star Wars Welcome Back hype.
Yeah, no, but now again, I don't, so at that point, now I didn't know about this, and this is where, you know, I've been kind of a loose fan. I didn't realize, Rogue One is what sucked me into wanting to do Andor. That's the simple tie-in for me, is that I saw Rogue One. I did not get to see it in theaters like Kyle did and like Gerald did, unfortunately, but I did see it. And I don't know, something about it in my gut, I wanted to see it. I wanted to watch it. I watched it. I thought it was great. Right? It just really was like a whole... It was more my style, right? As opposed to the prequel films in terms of it being more adult. Right?
That's the aspect of it, though, is that is a much... It's a darker Star Wars. It's a much more aimed at an adult audience Star Wars. And it was a story that a lot of fans of Star Wars were anxious to hear about, since it was the story of how they got the plans to the Death Star. And it turned out to be what I think was the one thing that, and it's the same reason Andor works, is unlike where George Lucas always felt every Star Wars should be written for 12-year-olds, this one was written more for adults. And I think that made a huge difference as far as that. And I think just strong word of mouth, and it was Disney actually did an incredible marketing on Rogue One as well.
Sure. And now, Gerald, you tell me, having seen Rogue One in the theater, Rogue One is, I don't know if you would, I mean, similar, somewhat similar, not at the same scale in terms of Andor, has what I personally would consider probably some of the most epic shots I've ever seen in Star Wars films.
Well, it's beautiful cinematography, absolutely. Just the mindset they had. And when you're watching it, I think probably Kyle enjoys it so much, and the reason why I liked it as well is because it is a different style of Star Wars movie. It did not present it in a cookie-cutter fashion as it was often been the case the past 20-some-odd years plus of Star Wars films, you know, almost going back to the original trilogy itself, which made the original trilogy so great. They've tried to rinse and repeat the formula so many different times to limited success up and down, either which way. But when it comes to, you know, what you saw with Rogue One made it itself, I think, stand out because of it, the different approach and the different style of movie making that it represented.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree with everything Gerald said there, because I think Rogue One was different than any kind of Star Wars movie. And I think it also benefits, the aspect of, I think it's one of the reasons why Andor succeeded in Rogue One, because people were looking for it. And, you know, it's just, I look back at it now too, when you even look at like Solo, which I think is another way of, it's not a cookie cutter Star Wars, but because Disney just wrecked the marketing on that film and really gave it no support, I think a lot of people have gone back to Solo, revisited it, and found it a much more enjoyable film. Where when you have the sequel trilogy, that was just a total disaster. That was a total disaster of nobody communicating with each other. And as somebody was dying in the background where Jeff's at.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when did the last trilogy that we got from Star Wars, the last film trilogy that we got, right? When did that occur exactly? When did we get the first one of those films?
What, 2015? Are you talking about The Force Awakens?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have ahead and talk about this last trilogy?
No, yeah, we don't.
Can we ignore that, please?
Yes, I think that's very fair.
Let me put it this way. There is a reason Bob Iger, as we talked about, doing less Marvel Star Wars films.
Which is ironic since Andor just got nominated for several Emmys. It is considered...
やめろ! どうだろう? 助けに来た男に殺される気分は?
Okay.
You're muted, Jeff.
Yeah, you're muted. There you go.
Okay, there we go. I'm sorry, Jeff, what were you saying?
I just said it was just nominated for several Emmys, so it's ironic him saying that on the same week that he's had one of his better successes with this Star Wars show on a critical basis because of all the awards that it's just been nominated.
Oh, Andor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Disney's such a disaster area right now. I think they're just looking to, unfortunately, save money and cut budgets. I think there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen that Disney's going to be next. Not going to be the same thing that we've seen.
Although there was no nominations for, some of the great characters that were in there. Gabriel Luna, Stellan Skarsgård, and
there should have been some.
Should have at least gotten one. Circus did an outstanding job in the show, and just was so mad when he didn't get it.
Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Hey, man. You know what? I totally forgot about you, man. I was so focused on my shitty Wi-Fi and my whole, like, you know, clusterfuck of a shit show special type of, like, usual remote, you know, attempt to try to do my show, the show, right, that, like, I totally forgot about you, but I'm glad you're back, brother. Hey, meet Gerald Glassford. You've met Kyle before.
I have.
How's it going, Ben?
Good. How
pleasure
are you?
To meet you.
Gerald Glassford, of course, reps the Pop Culture Cosmos, right, and is a good friend of mine. And Kyle and Gerald, I believe, are right up, you know, at your level in terms of, like, Star Wars lore and knowledge and whatnot. Ben's a hardcore Star Wars fan. Ben, we were just talking about Rogue One, and the boys had asked me to not talk about the last Star Wars trilogy, which I'm not going to. I only wanted the reference point because I wanted to know how far out the first film was from Rogue One. So if Rogue One came out in 2014,
correct.
Then we got The Force Awakens in 2015, right?
Correct.
It just kind of makes me wonder just a little bit, and just a small question to you, Ben. Now, I understand the backstory to some extent with Rogue One is one where I believe it was a writer or someone involved, you know, with Disney and with the production of Star Wars content that initially pitched the idea, you know, about doing like a TV series or an animated series or something like that with Rogue One.
Yeah.
Right. And then eventually it made its way to Kathleen Kennedy and she greenlit it as a film.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. So now with the timing though, right. I mean, there's no connection between Rogue One and the most recent trilogy that I know of. Right. Is there really any connection?
The only connection that you could probably draw is Leia and the whole, like, I guess the Skywalker saga. That's how it plays into it, especially at the end of Rogue One when you see Leia and she says hope, and that goes right into Episode Four.
I grasp the timeline. I do. That's one thing I've learned. I got to give credit to people like Kyle and Ben that have inspired me to actually want to know and understand the timeline, so I actually know when these things occurred. Like the Mandalorian, where that's at from, like, the original trilogy, where, you know, where Rogue One, all that. But now, let me ask you, Ben. For you, when Andor first came out and the premise of it first came out, right? Now, I understand that the Star Wars fandom was pretty low after the most recent trilogy.
Yeah.
The Mandalorian certainly, I guess, reinstilled some confidence, I would have to assume, right?
It definitely did, especially with Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, especially Dave Filoni, because Dave Filoni is a Star Wars guru, I would say.
Did Filoni do I'm in season 5 of Clone Wars right now, and then I'm gonna get into Rebels right after so I can prepare for Ahsoka,
nice.
Right?
Yeah.
You and I talked about already earlier today,
mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna drop the trailer for it here in a little bit actually. Because I think it's really cool and I just want to watch it with you guys. But you tell me, when you first heard about the premise of Andor, can you remember what your initial thoughts were in terms of, like, you know, were you, like, really positive? Were you somewhat positive? Were you kind of like, were you questionative of it?
No, I was actually really excited for it because I like Rogue One. I really do. Kind of gives everything that happened in Episode 4 more depth, and I'm a more in-depth kind of guy. I like to deep dive into things. So with Andor, it gives a backstory to this awesome character that we met in Rogue One, and I was actually really excited. And to hear also that it was the same people who had done the Bourne movies, I was on board with it.
Okay, now, is that kind of going to be the universal theme here, you think, Gerald? Like, because I mean, for me, like I already said myself, Andor, what drew me to Andor, wanting to cover Andor, was Rogue One, was the only evidence I needed for it. So was that your premise too with Andor going, were you positive going into it thinking, if this is off of Rogue One, this is probably going to be good?
That was actually going to give it a lot more hope for me. Sorry, pardon the pun of the hope word there. But I wanted to go ahead and say that, yeah, it just means to me, it meant to me that I think was really more of an attraction, and I thought it'd give it a better chance. Although, again, when it comes to Star Wars series, since they've, you know, opened it with Disney+, It's been a mixed bag of from the very good to very mediocre series so far. Nothing has been a real stinker. You could say the Book of Boba Fett has been maybe the kind of lackluster of any of the shows that they had, but they've not really had an out and out stinker like they've had, you know, with the movies. But at this point in time, I knew it was going to have a better chance of being good just by, again, the relation to Rogue One, Tony Gilroy, the involvement of so many of the parts that what made Rogue One so good.
Now, Kyle, same question to you. I mean, what was your take? How did Rogue One impact your view of Andor?
Well, knowing they were spinning off the Andor, when they made the announcement of Andor, I was actually very excited about it because I personally was a big fan of Rogue One, but having Tony Gilroy involved and going to a place that really hasn't been that covered within the Star Wars timeline and getting to see the underside of the rebellion. Not the fact that, yes, this was a rebellion, which means they were going to have to do some dirty things at some point. And it wasn't all just as glamorous, the underdogs fighting the forces of evil. But we were going to see a lot of things that, because it's a rebellion and it's rebellious warfare. I knew we were going to see that, and I trusted in Tony Gilroy to also give us that much more gritty side of Star Wars, that dirty side of Star Wars, which I don't think we've really gotten in a while. I mean, we got some of that aesthetic of it back with The Mandalorian, but not really so much that dirty side of it. And I think that was what I was looking for, was just a Star Wars from a different perspective that we haven't had in a very long time.
I've never heard anybody mention it, like, use the word dirty, but I get where you're coming from with that. I look at it more like, to me, I from jump saw Andor as almost like a Blade Runner-esque vibe. You know what I'm saying? Like, almost like a noir. But, you know what I'm saying? Like a, there were a couple episodes, Gerald, you have to agree with me, I'm sure, that where literally some of the openings of those Andor episodes are literally look just like a scene from Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah, when it goes to Coruscant, and, because it has that style. There were a couple, like you said, absolutely, that have that feel of Blade Runner in it. And I'm a huge Blade Runner fan, so I get where you're coming from on that. And outside, like I said before on the show, on my show, outside of a couple filler episodes on the series, you really get the sense of that it really was a good series to go ahead and follow and watch all the way through. Just really has been, for me, the best experience watching Star Wars, maybe outside of Mandalorian Season 2. Both are really good, and as far as some of the best Star Wars I've seen, I don't know, going back to the original trilogy.
Well, and just to address that quickly, I think that, like, honestly, for me, it's huge for me. Like, it really is. To be at this point in my life at 40 and feel that desire to be invested into the Star Wars fandom and feel like, I mean, I don't even feel like I belong in there yet. Like, I haven't done enough research. I haven't done enough reading. I haven't put the time in yet, right? Maybe I'm holding myself to, like, you know, some kind of high standards to join this fandom. But I take the Star Wars fandom very seriously. I do. For me, I think that, as I've told you before, Gerald, I've told you, Kyle, I've told you, Ben, really, for me, I think that covering Andor episodically, covering the House of Dragon, the House of the Dragon, covering The Last of Us, it really, like, honestly, it's sort of, in what could have been a somewhat dismal year last year with some of the Marvel stuff that came out, it really uplifted me. In a way, right? At times when maybe I had some hard times, like, it was nice to be able to know that I had an Andor episode to review, right? Doing the House of the Dragon totally changed my entire mindset in terms of moderating shows, of what was capable and what I had to learn how to do to make it work. So I just want to say that, like, you know, I'm very thankful to everybody that's come on and whatnot and taught Star Wars with me, like Ben, like you, Gerald, like Kyle, like Kevin, like Gunner. You know, that, you know, to where like Jay, that's going to be on next week, like Matthew from Australia, where, you know, to where, like, I ordered the books, the Thrawn books, like, you know, and they're on the way, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, like, I'm getting prepped for Ahsoka. We're going to cover every single Star Wars series that comes out that we can cover. We're going to cover it, even a culty probably, even though that's not going to be tested to shit, right? Whatever. At that point, for me, you tell me, Ben, sort of, I guess, jumping from Rogue One over to Andor again, what was it for you with Rogue One that really, what did it do for you? I mean, you know, like, as a Star Wars fan, being a part of the fandom for a long time, right? Being a staunch one. What did Rogue One mean to you, sort of? I mean, where you were at in your fandom levels or whatever?
When Rogue One came out, I've been a fan all my life. I was just getting into more of the lore around that time. And Rogue One really opened that door for me. I think that was when it really, like, oh wow, there's more to this universe than just the six movies. Because I hadn't seen Clone Wars yet. I hadn't seen Rebels. I hadn't watched any of that other stuff. I hadn't read any of the books or the comic books. So that's what Rogue One really did for me. Like, oh, wow, there's a lot more to this universe that can be explored. And obviously, like, me being, like, Darth Vader is my favorite villain of all time. Having him come back was just awesome for me. To see him on the big screen, for the first time, basically, since Revenge of the Sith, was awesome. It was just, and then to see him full froth too, like, especially at the end in that hallway scene, like, full froth, angry Darth Vader ripping people to shreds. I mean, it just opened everything up for me as lore wise.
I never even thought about this, but did it set some kind of bar where maybe where, like, when they did drop that first film in the trilogy, like, it kind of, like, hurt it a little bit?
A little bit, but at the same time, I'm easily entertained, and I don't really analyze things until later. So I was actually pretty excited about Force Awakens, watching a Star Wars movie again in theaters. I was super excited about it. I watched it. I was entertained. I was happy. And then I sat and really analyzed it. I was like, oh, episode 4, but with a planet. Interesting. And then it just went.
Okay.
I think the big thing with Rogue One and what it showed with a lot of people was something that I think, especially the older generations of Star Wars fans who have grown up with the original trilogy going forward, it showed a Star Wars could grow up and be adults. And I, you know, where it can write something that doesn't have to be necessarily for everybody, but appeal to an older generation of Star Wars fans and not follow that Star Wars cookie cutter format that has been kind of going on since the prequel trilogy. And you know, it sounds like bashing the Star Wars because it has a formula and it works. But the problem was when Disney got a hold of that formula, they tried to reinvent the wheel, so to speak, and it didn't work out quite well because they had no plan. They just it was let's see what can we throw it against the wall and see what sticks. And the reason why Rogue One works so well is because the creative talent that was there with Rogue One had a plan and stuck to it. And because it was a story that was self-contained, even though it does tie in with the Star Wars saga, but it was not. There was no more sequels coming. It was just, we're putting this there. It's a one-piece thing, and I think that it protected Rogue One in some way from some of the other massive problems that were going on with Disney and Lucasfilm at that time. And I think the other aspect is that carries over to Andor, where you had Tony Gilroy, who had enough clout and enough say to say, "I'm doing it my way. If you're gonna hire me, you need to be prepared for that." And they hired him, and they let him, like they let Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau at least do with the start of The Mandalorian, do it their way. And it's one of those things that I think with that's why Andor succeeds, because you don't have other fingers from the outside influencing Andor. And I think it was the same way with Rogue One. You didn't have all these things. I know they brought in Tony Gilroy to do some work after Gareth Edwards and make some things, but it wasn't drastic like it was with just the constant changeover with the sequel trilogy or with Solo. And I think that's why Rogue One worked, and because Rogue One also did something that I think is something the fans to this day, most fans will agree, is one of the greatest Darth Vader moments in Star Wars history.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
okay,
that helps it immensely.
Ben, did you want to chime in on that in any way?
I mean, I agree completely. Rogue One really, it kind of goes back to what I said. It dives in deeper into the franchise, shows a darker side, that little darker side, and then the Andor shows that full darker side of Star Wars that the movies just didn't show. Like, you think the movies, you think happy-go-lucky, everything is very crystal clear. There's no gray in the movies. It's like you're the light side or the dark side. There's really no gray. And then you get Rogue One, where it's like, huh, okay, so Andor's going to have to kill this guy on orders from the Rebellion. They're going to have to do some really nasty shit to get what they want. It happens in Rebellions. It happens in war. And then Andor just dives even deeper into that. So, and then, yes, the Darth Vader scene. All-time favorite Darth Vader scene. I could easily just skip to that part, watch that part.
Kyle, the same question to you. What were your first thoughts, when you first heard about Andor? I mean, did it, you know...
I was excited. I mean, I was excited for the possibilities of what Andor could produce. Again, bringing Tony Gilroy in was a huge boon to that show. And... you know, it again, Andor works because it's different, and that's the thing. I have been preaching this since the end of the sequel trilogy. We need to be done with focusing on the Jedi, on Skywalker, anything like that. We need to focus on, there's such a big sandbox out there for Star Wars to play with. Now, the Ahsoka thing, that's Filoni's baby, and he's getting to tell the story he's always wanted to tell. And even though Rogue One takes place during the Skywalker saga, it stands on its own 2 feet. And that's the thing. It's not relying on Jedi myth. It's not relying on a lot of things that were already established. It gave us strong characters. It gave us well-written characters. And it gave us a story that we could identify with, that we could understand the aspects of it, and yet it still tied itself into the greater Star Wars picture. But I think what has happened is a couple of things. I think Disney, when they first started with the sequel trilogy, was so concerned about creating their own mark on Star Wars that they lost sight of what Star Wars was about. And then two, I think what they failed to realize was that they didn't realize their entire market. I think they were still trying to go for a lot of kids, and that's great. You still have Star Wars for kids, but you're trying to market to a whole generation that's grown up, and their story tastes have changed, and what they're looking for in a story has changed. And unfortunately, with the sequel trilogy, they didn't do that. But that's what they did accomplish with Rogue One, was they gave something for the older generation of Star Wars instead of focusing on trying to create something new and something different for Disney to say, I'll stand on our own, this is our Star Wars. With Rogue One, they let it naturally transition and naturally tell the story instead of trying to force feed stuff, and it worked. And that's still one of the biggest problems with Lucasfilm and Disney, is that at some point they can't help themselves but try to force feed marketing and everything else onto the Star Wars product instead of just letting it tell its story. And I think that's, you can even see that even happening with Mandalorian season 3, where it felt like, well, no, they basically said they were forced to rewrite a lot of the script for Mandalorian season 3 to include Grogu. And that's why we didn't get the natural transition of Grogu in being reunited in Mandalorian. It was forced on Book of Boba Fett, which affected Book of Boba Fett. And so, again, it comes down to how this works. We've lost Jeff. But I think that leads into, guys, the importance of Andor, because I think Andor might go down as one of the most important Star Wars series to ever come out, because it gave us something different with Andor.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. There you are.
And Jeff is back.
Hey, there I am. Now, if you could hear me, Gerald Glassford, what were your expectations for Andor? Now, obviously you felt positive about it, but I mean, did you go into it with any expectation at all, truthfully, that it could potentially end up being something with what you were initially given, let's say, okay, in terms of like what the story was going to be, that they were going to have Diego Luna as the main character and whatnot, everything, right? It was going to be centered around him. We knew right off the bat, like, say when you saw the first trailer, we'll say, right? Did you see anything in that and whatnot that said to you, like, okay, this could be standout shit here?
Well, yeah, absolutely. When you include, although Andy Serkis was not in it at the time, you didn't know he was going to be in it. But you did see Stellan Skarsgård, and you knew that Gabriel Luna was going to be a part of it. Just the quality of actors involved in this that we already knew ahead of time going into the series that were going to be involved just lends itself to that, idea that this project, that this show, the series was going to be something very special.
Okay, now, so at that point then, really what it boils down to, it was more of a sense of, well, I know who's responsible for creating this, or making this, or who the writers are.
Yeah, absolutely. When that trailer came out, and then you also saw exactly who was going to be starring in it, as far as some of the big names that are in it, and that Forrest Whitaker was going to make his return, that you got a chance to see Stellan Skarsgård, his first entry in the Star Wars universe. There's some heavyweight names. Gabriel Luna coming back to reprise his role, who did such a good job in Rogue One. These are heavyweight names coming back to it. So I'm just glad that, that they all committed to it. They're committed to a season two, that they filmed or were going to finish filming a season two. I'm not sure what the status is right now because of the SAG strike. But, again, it's a compliment to Disney and Star Wars that they were able to go ahead and create such a great vision for what was, like, what this, entire crew here seems to be the most favored movie of the past 15 years of Star Wars.
Well said. Well said. And now, let me also ask you, going to you, Ben, in terms of how Andor started off, episodes 1-3, right?
Yeah.
Take yourself back to that period, and I'm going to get into what goes on during that and whatnot, right? But in terms of just kind of where you were at that point. I mean, I didn't know you then. I don't think, or maybe I had met you. I can't remember. But where were you at, kind of, at that point? Around episode 2-3, were you kind of like at all having any doubts with the series? Or, oh, you know what, before we do that, I actually have a Rogue One trailer that I managed to somehow get to upload, and I'm actually going to play it real quick. I thought it'd be fun.
Yeah, go for it.
The world is coming undone. Imperial flags reign across the galaxy.
Did it play?
Negative.
Can you be trusted without
your trackers? You gotta be kidding me.
Let's just get this over.
Oh, there we go.
We have a mission for you.
I'm living in the low Wi-Fi, no Wi-Fi dimension, whatever, I guess, where you activate things and nothing even happens.
Oh, are you really doing this?
Hold on, I think I got it now. Come on, Rogue One. Give it to us, baby. Well, I guess it's not going to play. That's unfortunate. So much for that, folks. Technical difficulties.
But,
yeah, I'm hitting it. It's not turning on. My bad. So much for that. I've never even seen the Rogue One trailer before either. I was looking forward to seeing it. So basically, again, back to my question. Now I know personally, and I talked to Kyle about this, and I've talked to Gerald about this, I've talked to you about this, Ben. I know a lot of people that I've talked to, not recently, but in the past, that they got to episode 2 and just stopped with Andor. So, did you get to a point around, you know, the episode 1 to 3 mark, which is why I just wanted to talk about that in this show? Where were you at that point?
I was actually really intrigued. I was actually enjoying the time that they were taking to build this world, to build these characters, to tell this story. And then I had no issues, no doubts that it was actually going to get better and continue to just build and build and build. I realized that the robbery after episode 3 was going to take 3 episodes. For however long it took, off the top of my head, but I love the slow burn, because you don't really get that. You think Star Wars is like wham, bam, pow, thank you very much, but with Andor, they really took the time to develop the story, and to just like really build the suspense up until that raid happens on that town with the police.
The heist.
Yeah.
Which is, I believe, what, guys? Episode 5?
Or yeah, the heist. Well, even before then, when I can't remember off the top of my head. Gosh dang it.
The heist is kind of its own arc through 4, 5,
yeah, and 6. The arc before that, where, like, that gung-ho policeman, merchant policeman, yeah, goes off and like raids Andor's town and
Kyle Soler's character and everything and whatnot. On Therax.
Like, that's when it really launches and you start to like, okay, it's starting to get a little bit more.
That's right, because episode 3 is when Luthen actually finally makes contact with Cassian, right?
You muted yourself, Jeff. You're still muted.
Now it's all Kyle. Now it's all Jeff. And he's still muted. Yeah, you're muted.
Oh, he got us all back.
Yep, he got us all back. But he's still muted.
He's pushing buttons. He's pushing buttons.
Okay, we can't.
Muted?
But he's still muted. He's still muted, and he's gone again.
He's in, and he's out, and he's muted again.
So this is how they really blew up the Death Star. They just let him put Jeff in it and let him push.
Exactly, and he just pushed buttons. That's how this Death Star blew up. It wasn't the plans. It wasn't Luke blowing it up. It was Jeff.
No, yeah, it was Jeff pushing buttons.
Yeah. He's like, how do I fire? Reverse fire.
Yeah, well, Jeff figures it out, because I think one of the cool things with Andor that I really liked too was the fact how they filmed it with those mini arcs within it, and I really think that was one of the things that sold it on the show, because I know there was a couple of people who were like, I'm just not feeling Andor, and I'm like, okay, go to episode 4, 5, and 6, watch that, and if that pulls you in, then go watch episodes 1, 2, and 3, because you can watch those arcs without necessarily having watched everything that's happened, especially that 4, 5, and 6.
Watch 1, 2, and 3. Yeah, I agree completely. There he is. Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh yeah, I'm glad you guys are enjoying my my professionality over here on this live stream. I'm showing myself as a black screen. Oh, there I am. No, so what I was just going to ask you quick here I see what you're talking about. That is, of course, the episode where we then, you know, Luthen does take Cassian, right? And, you know, we do then get that arc, like you said, Kyle, the 4, 5, 6 episode, where in 6 we get the heist. And it does really pick up at that point and whatnot, right? Episode 3 is really great. But in terms of Gerald, of, you know, where you were at, sort of, I guess, with the same question with you with episodes 1 through 3, you know, not without knowing that we were going to get in episode 4, did you at all have any hesitancy or anything like that? Or was there any moment for you, right, after, like, episode 2, maybe, where you saw, like, sort of, like, things being too slow?
No, not at all. Again, it dealt with a great... the filler episodes didn't come until later in the season for me. The episodes that looked like it were just there just to go ahead and fill up the episode log. There's only 2 of them. Like I said, 10 of the episodes are must-watch. If somebody... As I've said on my show, 10 of the episodes are definitely must-watch and definitely worth the time if you're seeing it. 2 episodes are, you know, fluff. They're just kind of filler. They're just kind of there. They're kind of set up before the real action begins. But again, 10 episodes are definitely worth your time, and it really didn't get that way as far as anything unnecessary until you got later in the series.
I got some interesting camera angles going on here.
Yes, you do.
Hey, I did do an outline here. I just want to be clear here, folks. Just to try to save whatever professional face I can. Now, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, professional was out the door on this show within the first 30 seconds. Come on.
I refuse to call this one a shit show special, though, because I'm not going to. Because, look, as a content creator, as a part of your evolution, right... You have to learn from your mistakes and figure out things like these remote recordings and whatnot. Obviously, I've got to buy some better equipment or some shit, and I will. So there you go. I'm going to be having a conversation with Verizon. You can better believe it tomorrow. I can tell you that right now. You know, honestly, what the hell is going to be having 5G if it's this like this shit? But either way, they don't. I'm just kidding. My phone says I have 5G, but we don't have 5G. We don't have the infrastructure down here in Southwest Florida for it yet. They've told me that at the Verizon store. But and Kyle, would you say that you were kind of in the same place? Now, I personally had no problem with it myself either. I didn't hear the gripes really about the sort of the slow burn or whatever with Andor until we got into the series heavily, like more. It was more episode 3, episode 4, episode 5 where I started to hear people actually. Outside the shows, not during the review shows, because during the review shows, really nobody was griping, for the most part.
I think what happened in this case, and I think it was one of the few times Disney got it right was putting out the first 2 episodes at the same time on the same day, doing the 2 episode release. Because if they would have done just single episode releases, a lot of people I think would have checked out after the first episode, because I think people were like, oh, this is slow. And I think the one thing Disney could have, one of the things that also helped Disney was they ended up putting Andor out, at least the first few a couple of the episodes out on just basic broadcasts. And I think that got some people's attention as well. I think the thing with Andor is that I think most true Star Wars fans knew we were coming in for something different, so they had a little more patience with it. But and I think this is becoming something that I'm seeing more and more with just in fandom programming in general, is are they writing for the general audience or are they writing for the fans? Because if you write for the fans, that's great, but you're only going to get a select population. If you're writing for the fans and the general audience, then you've got to bring in those dollars and on a financial side. But I think Andor was one of those shows where it didn't really start hitting it for both the general audience and the fans until episode 3. And I think that's crucial, because I think that those first 3, that first arc and how they wrote Andor in these arcs helped sell it initially for people who may have jumped into it later after word of mouth got on it, because they could get sold on episodes 4, 5, and 6 without being lost. But I think for a lot of the Star Wars fans, they knew already going in, this is going to be something different. And the ones who were really patient and understood what was going on knew that, okay, I got to ride this out because I know this is 112 episodes, and it's only, and we knew going in there was going to be a second season of Andor. So we knew that this was going to be a longer game with this. And Andor really was a just a risk by Disney and something different than anything they've been trying since they put out Disney Plus. And, you know, I think a lot of people will say Andor is Disney Plus's biggest success to date.
Okay, now when you say success, you mean in terms of the overall quality of the series?
I think in the overall quality of the series and the response to it, and just across the board, I think Andor is critically, fan-wise, and just everything. I think it's the biggest success Disney Plus has had as far as Disney Plus original program.
Now, okay, I'll go to you, Gerald, and then you, Ben. Would you agree with Kyle? Now, I agree with him. I do. I personally think that I think Secret Invasion, as of right now, would fall in number two in terms for me as far as what I found to be the most high-quality, entertaining Disney Plus shows across the spectrum. Series I've watched, right? I think Andor is the best one.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
I was going to say Secret Invasion's for me is not, it's doing okay, but I found other Disney Plus series to be better, to be quite honest with you. But Andor is probably the best. Either that, you could put Hawkeye for me, and then also as well Mandalorian Season 2. You could probably put those three in a top three for me. Secret Invasion has been a little bit mixed. This latest episode, I know, Kyle, you mentioned the action-packed ending of Episode 4. It was just for me kind of a filler episode up until that point, but again, it's all right. And it's kind of a little bit of a disappointment for me because Winter Soldier is my all-time favorite Marvel movie, and it tries hard to get those fives, but it's just not quite there. Samuel Jackson killing it.
The director flat out said that was one of his, like, three or four influences that he listed as his main influences and whatnot with the show was Winter Soldier.
Go ahead.
I know Ben wanted to finish up on that. So
go ahead, Ben.
All right, So, for me, I haven't watched it. I've been tied up in so many other shows, I haven't got a chance yet. But I would say Andor is one of my favorite Star Wars shows. It goes probably for number one, Mandalorian at number two, and then Obi-Wan Kenobi at number three. Those are my top three Disney Plus shows. And every time I watch it, it just gets better and better. Like, I'll pick something up new that I didn't see before.
Okay. But now it might be on my end. Your audio cut out a little bit there at the end.
You were breaking up a little bit there, Ben.
Am I still breaking? Can you hear me now?
You're still breaking up. So
maybe. Hold on.
You're okay. I'm sure you're fine. It usually works itself out. It can't be as bad as my stuff. Gerald, you know what? To be fair, now that I think about it, I probably would put WandaVision beneath Andor, probably, myself, personally. I've got to get rid of that UHF background, man. Having, like, some naked dude's back or whatever, whatnot, the background is not helping things out at all.
Well, Andor, again, is the most critically lauded. I think either that or WandaVision.
Yes.
I think of any of the, as far as getting Emmy nominations.
I think Andor has topped it.
Okay. I wasn't sure how many, because most of it's on the technical aspect as opposed to acting.
Yes.
I was kind of disappointed,
overall. Andor got a couple of big ones that WandaVision didn't get.
Yeah, best drama, absolutely. Best drama one that.
Sorry about that, guys.
No problem.
So Andor, my favorite Disney Plus show, and then second will be The Mandalorian, and then my third favorite would be Obi-Wan Kenobi. All Star Wars, I know. But I do, and I also do enjoy the Marvel ones. I haven't watched Secret Invasion yet because I've just been tied up in so many other TV shows. My wife and I are watching a whole bunch on the side as well. So I just haven't had time to watch it yet. But looking forward to it. But Andor just keeps getting better and better every time I rewatch it. I rewatched it just last week, actually. And just picking up on the tiny details that you don't pick up in an initial watch or even a second watch. That's like my third time rewatching it. Just keep finding new things that you didn't see before, and with time it's just gotten better and better, and it's gonna keep getting better and better with time.
I've enjoyed it too. I watched the first three episodes today with my daughter. I managed to force her to watch them.
Nice.
So right, like it had to happen. I was not gonna let her not watch it, but you know, and she's, I'm hoping that, like, you know, you hope that, like, maybe, I'm hoping something like Andor will break out to her to, like, she'll widen up a little bit and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, I'll tell you, that now, in terms of, overall, like, you tell me, Gerald, I don't know, I mean, you may feel a little bit differently about it than I do, I don't know, or not care as much about it, but I find myself when I do come across people where, like, you know, Andor comes up in the past and whatnot and everything, and they do tell me, like, oh my god, Andor sucked, I stopped after episode 2 or 3 or whatever and whatnot and never went back and whatnot and everything, like, you know, like, they, I mean, they, everyone, not everyone I've talked to about it has been that negative, but some of them have been this, like, flat out, that's, it was garbage, whatever, like, I stopped because it was so slow, whatever, you know, that kind of deal. And then a lot of people, other times, they're usually just more along the lines of, like, well, I gave it a try, right? And then I kind of fell off with it, right? I kind of dropped off. I didn't stick with it. It didn't catch me, right? But I've had a couple people that have told me that they have gone back and rewatched it. They did watch it through and that they have enjoyed it. Do you, now I don't get upset when that happens. My take thing on it with at the end of the day is that I just would love to see more people actually watch the series.
All I will say is that most everybody that I've spoken to about it absolutely loved Andor, and you know, if somebody hasn't finished it, it's just because they just been not like Ben. They're just, life gets in the way, and they're just not able to conclude it. But I haven't heard a disparaging word yet from our audience or my co-host on Andor because of how good it is. So I'm getting a lot more positive feedback, I think, on my end than maybe you're getting.
And again, I'm just talking about probably, we're talking about less than 10 different creators and, like, friends, people I know, whatnot, that just, you know, that whatever, like I said, that they never could get into it. But then again, some of them have gone back and revisited it. And I agree with you, though. Jared, we've had this conversation before. The majority of the people I know that have watched it, that have actually watched it all the way through, they think it was immaculate, right? And I've had several creators that Kyle knows. And Gerald, you either know them, I think, too, or you know of them, you know, through me, probably, or you've heard of them, that they think it's been, and I'm talking to people about people who are full-blown Star Wars fans, like, all out, like y'all are, for the most part, who flat out, like, have said to, like, flat out that Andor brought them back, sort of, almost, right? You know what I mean? Like, they got to a point where, like, Andor was what they needed to kind of, like, sort of draw them back in. Does that make sense, Kyle?
I don't know. From my experience, I think the people who were out on Star Wars at that point, they were drawn in by Mandalorian. I think Mandalorian really drew Star Wars fans.
It paved the way.
I think it really drew back in the Star Wars fans who felt like they had been ignored by the sequel trilogy and things the sequel trilogy had done. And I think that with what Andor did was it got... There were the Star Wars fans who were holding on to hope because of Rogue One, how good that was. And I think Andor, and then The Mandalorian hit, that helped. And then I think Andor got some of those fans who really enjoyed Rogue One to get their eyes back on Star Wars. I think the biggest issue with Andor is that I don't know if I would necessarily use Andor to sell somebody on Star Wars for the first time. And only
no.
Because I think it's too enriched in the history of Star Wars and what's going on with it. And I don't... Andor is so different than anything else that is Star Wars. And I think that's why it works for so many Star Wars fans, because it's giving them something different, giving them something different to talk about in a different view. But the other thing I'll say this about Andor is, as much as I love Andor, Andor is a commitment to go back and rewatch because it's so deep, it's so intense. The story is still requires you to be fully locked in.
It is.
It, while it's a rewatchable show, it's a time-consuming show. And especially in today's day and age where we have this content coming out almost on a daily basis. There's new content you want to see. There's something coming out. And I think, you know, that I'm going to actually give a little credit to Bob Iger here, even after all of his comments. I think he has a point of there's too much content coming out and it's diluting the product. And I think on that aspect of it, is if we can get our content amount that's coming out a little bit cut down, whether it's because of what's going on in Hollywood right now with the strikes or just the studios are starting to realize we don't need to be putting out as much content as we are, and we get more quality than quantity, you know, give people a chance to go back and see some of these things that they haven't had a chance to watch yet because there's just too much.
But my problem with that, Kyle, is that I don't understand why Iger mentioned Star Wars in that category. I don't get that.
Because those are their two biggest flagships. And Star Wars costs a shit ton of money to make.
Okay, that's true. That's fair. I get that. But what I'm saying is that as opposed to Marvel Phase 4, the stuff that Star Wars has been putting out with its Disney Plus series, again, with the exception of maybe Boba Fett, right, like Gerald said, which you could kind of say is a 50-50 kind of series, I thought. Like, it wasn't terrible, but it also wasn't all that great, right? You know? But again, that's just my personal opinion. I feel like their Disney Plus stuff has been solid, right? Now, I didn't see Obi-Wan Kenobi, so I can't say anything about that one. But
well, I think Obi-Wan was a mixed bag for some people. I've got to be honest with you, from what I've heard, Skeleton Crew is kind of, like, coming out of the gate a little iffy. I've heard good things about The Acolyte. I don't even know if that's fully done yet or if that's getting delayed now because of the strikes. But I think what the Star Wars problem is on that side is they invest money to start a Star Wars project and then it just goes to the wayside. And they invest, you know, the old, you get a Star Wars project, and then nothing comes of it. And I think what in the Star Wars aspect of it is they want to just really nail down a couple of projects instead of trying to do name out all these projects and really focus on making sure those projects get out. And I think I think with Star Wars, it's not so much been about the quality. It's about, hey, we announced this stuff and then half of it never comes out. And I think that's probably why he's like, okay, we're just going to really kind of narrow it down and make sure we're getting projects that we can get out at high quality.
And see, now, Ben, you can jump in here if you want. This is where the conversation really opens up, really, Kyle, because when you add this angle to things, this is where I get to where, like, that conversation on its own is this whole new conversation, right? Like, it literally is. Like, we could go back and forth for hours about whether or not we all agree on, like, the amount of, like, for instance, Star Wars films that should be released every year, or MCU films that should be released every year that we deserve as fans every year, right? Or whatever. I personally am of the belief that, as I told Ben, as I've told Kyle, I believe that the problem with Marvel, with the MCU Phase 4, for instance, was not so much the movies, although that didn't help. It was the Disney Plus series where they overdid it. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where they pushed and pushed. That's just my feeling. With Andor, as Kyle kind of mentioned, and Gerald has also said something about this, I believe, too, Andor is not something that you would want, really, to expose to someone as a new Star Wars fan. Because, again, it's almost like a limited series, and I think this connects to what Kyle's talking about, Ben, and that's to you, Gerald. The fact that because of the Feige formula, because of Marvel Studios and the Infinity Saga, we've all just come to this place where we have these expectations that everything that these fans that did that Warner Brothers with DC, with Star Wars with Disney, with Marvel with Disney, we have this expectation that everything is going to lead to something else, right? Like, everything has to connect to something else to then lead to something better, almost, right? Like, that's how it has to work. But it doesn't have to work that way, right? It doesn't. I mean, before the Infinity Saga, if you made two standalone TV series, right, that were really solid, and whatnot, that would be good enough, right, to attract you, you know, a fan, I would think, an audience, to a brand, you know, that you then would put content out under or whatnot. So what do you think? I mean, when it comes to Andor, do you feel like it's unfortunate in a way that Andor is as exceptional as it was and will end up being, I believe, with season two? Yet at the same time, it does not really add anything. It fills in some gaps and it is a part of the timeline. It's got Mon Mothma in it from the original trilogy, but again, it doesn't push. It doesn't push any the envelope.
No, I think it's one of those. I agree. It's probably introduce a brand new Star Wars fan. If you want to introduce a brand new Star Wars fan, you haven't watched the original trilogy. Or you haven't watched 1 through 6, and that started with, oh, yeah, it shows stuff like that. But yeah, Andor doesn't really add anything, it gives the rebellion more depth. But I actually gotta head out here.
Same here, Jeff.
I see you guys. I'm sorry about the private chat, I couldn't see it on my screen.
No, you're
no
good.
No worries.
You're good. We figured. I think I mentioned it, but yeah, I gotta head up with the kids, put the kids to bed. But
no problem.
Andor's great. And I can't wait to do.
No problem, and thank you very much for coming on, and Gerald, thank you for coming on. I'm sorry, it's probably not actually a good thing you guys are going to dip. I don't think Kyle and I are going to stay on here for too long, because with me and with my bad Wi-Fi myself, I think I'm probably going to call it a night here soon.
Yeah. Great conversation, everyone. Yeah. Truly appreciated. Great meeting everyone. Jeff, don't get run over by a car, man.
I won't. I promise. I won't.
I'm hoping his finger isn't on the doomsday button.
Exactly.
No, listen, I am safely tucked over here in this cul-de-sac hotel area of Ocala. I think I'm very safe. So I should be okay. All right, Gerald, it's good to see you, Ben.
Hope to talk to you guys. All the best.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Kyle, my friend, thank you for sticking with me, brother. I appreciate you. And honestly, why not, right? You know what though? Let me get rid of this. I got to get rid of this UHF shot with the freaking the Rambo Weird Al. Yeah, it's just you know, the whole like naked back of him, dude. Look is not flying for me. So I need to eliminate that if I even can. We'll have to see.
It's gone now.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you. Honestly, I'm telling you right now, Kyle, and I don't mind putting this out in the show. I don't. I'm not happy at all with Verizon right now, and I'm gonna be having a talk with them because I get what you're saying. I kind of understand. I believe what you're saying about Ocala being kind of a sort of maybe a known not so hot area for Wi-Fi.
More cell signal.
Yeah, see, I don't really know why. I don't get it. Like, I don't know. Lack of towers. Okay. So then, I mean, you live longer down here than I have, Kyle. So this is like a well-known thing that this sort of like almost like central part of Florida is known for like having shitty Wi-Fi almost.
Yeah, well, like I said, you're trying to use a hotel Wi-Fi or you're trying to hotspot your phone when you're probably not getting that great a cell signal. I'm actually surprised you haven't had more problems with
yourself
than you have.
Well, I mean, the main thing that I'm not happy with Verizon with this point, whatnot, and all that is, again, we've talked to this about you and I before, Kyle. It's just simply the fact that, like, you know, they sell me this plan, just like my Xfinity Comcast, where they sell me what they call like their exclusive unlimited, like most expensive package they have, right? And it's all based on the fact that when you tell them that you're a content creator, they say, oh, well, we've got the perfect package for you, right? You know what I'm saying. We have everything you need, right?
They have everything you need as long as you're in the right area to ask.
There you go. And see, that's the problem is that, like, it really bothers me that, like, I paid for this, you know, very expensive Verizon plan. And realistically, even, like, over in my area, like, over in Sarasota County, you know as well as I do, oh, we talked about this before, my 5G hotspot, well, for one thing, it's not even a 5G hotspot, because again, we both know there is no 5G in our area. At least, you know, I don't have it.
Yeah, I think I have it a little bit more where I'm at, but you're a little bit more south of me, so there's still, and I know that there are still carrying towers after Earth.
They are, which, you know, that is true, and that's part of the Comcast Xfinity whole, like, bullshit excuses and whatnot and everything and whatnot, is that they're still dealing with crap from the hurricane, too. But, in general, you know, my phone will show 5G occasionally, like it is right now. But again, I don't know that I really have it, because again, I've been to the store, and the people at the store flat out say that the infrastructure for it's not here yet.
No, it's not. You might be picking up something that's showing that there's 5G there, but that doesn't mean you're getting 5G. So, you know, you are just Andor dealing with.
Well, I think what I'm going to end up doing here, folks, and of course, I'll talk to Kyle about this, too, because Kyle's kind of like my sort of like troubleshooting guru when it comes to this kind of stuff, is I'm going to have to come up with a game plan so that when I come up here, there has to be something I can buy, Kyle. There has to be.
You might have to get a hotspot device or something like that, or you need to check with the hotel and just tell them you're having some problems with their Wi-Fi. Maybe there's something that you're missing with their Wi-Fi.
That, you know what? That's true. That we talked about that when the hurricane came, about how you can just go ahead and buy the hotspots themselves.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't have to come out of a cell phone and whatnot and everything.
Yeah. I mean, you're still relying on cell signal, but without everything else running on your phone that could be causing drainage on your signal as well. But yeah, I mean, I would try that, or check in the hotel too, and just give me or signal. Maybe there's something more that you have that they haven't done, or there's a security thing to a website they have that you have to go through to really get full access.
No, and you know what? And I'm going to call it there, folks. And I'm going to call it there, Kyle. I appreciate you coming on, brother. I do.
No problem. Always fun to talk a little Andor.
No, I'm not going to apologize, because you know how this is, right? It's a new experience for me. I'm learning, right? You know that I'll do what I got to do to where next time I come up here and do a show, if I can't with confidence troubleshoot before the show and know that I'm good and I test my live and everything and everything's fine, I'm not doing a show.
Yeah. Nope. Hey, a first time test, lesson learned, and go from there.
Yeah, I was going to stay another night tonight and whatnot, another night, Monday night and whatnot, and hang out with my daughter for another night, but I have a show to do tomorrow night and whatnot. I've got to review Dead City Episode 5. And at this point, I think I'm going to have to go back home.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I've already seen Dead City Episode 5. There's not much to review.
What were the mutant fucking the mutant walkers in the sewers like?
They were all right, but this is an episode that the trailer showed a lot of action, but there was a lot of talking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is there at least some crazy fucking monsters or something though?
You see some hints at some things, but it doesn't feel as all out as the trailer showed.
Okay, great. Well, thanks. I appreciate you letting me know that, Kyle. Thank you for letting me down softly.
Well, you know, at least you have forewarning not to be disappointed.
There you go. All right, brother. Listen, we're going to get out of here. Thank you, folks. We'll see you next time.
Take care, everybody.
Later.
See ya.
If I can get an outro to work. Espérate.